and welcome to Behind the Mic Radio. I am your host, Dawn Mack, and I want to say a huge welcome and hello to everyone out there. It's here on the East Coast. I know a lot of people are winding down from their work day and looking forward to just unwinding for the evening, and we are so excited to be kicking off our evening tonight with our special guest, who is most remembered for her portrayal of Jan on The Brady Bunch. But she has also been seen in other series, including Fudge, The Brady's, That 70s Show, All My Children, The Facts of Life, as well as TV movies such as Dawn, The Portrait of a Teenage Runaway, and Little Women. Additionally, she is a seasoned artist, and her oil-on-canvas paintings are represented by galleries across the U.S. She is a spokesperson for Frederick's Canvas and regularly donates artworks to charity, including Wild Horse Ranch Rescue in Arizona, Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, and the Laguna College of Art and Design. We would like to extend a very warm welcome to Eve Plum. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. It's such an honor to have you with us this evening, and thank you so much for being here.
Sure.
Well, I want to begin by talking a little bit about the Brady Bunch. We have lots of folks listening in tonight who are huge Brady Bunch fans, and myself included. And the Brady Bunch was this all-American kind of show and truly one of a kind, you know, given the blended family concept, which was not talked about that much back in the 70s when the show was filmed. Why do you think the show was such a huge success?
I think it just told everyday family stories that everybody can still relate to.
Most definitely. What are some of your fondest memories of being on the show?
Well, you know, it was just a great way to grow up. I learned from some really great actors how to work in television, and it served me very well.
I would say so. You know, it's funny because as I know that a lot of people, even to this day, I mean, it was a generational thing. I know for me, it was a very big part of my childhood and early teen years. And I just, you know, I think about it. Is it one of those things for you that as you've continued on in your career, you've been able to kind of get away from the Jan Brady? Or do people still kind of think of you as being, you know, Jan Brady from the Brady Bunch?
I think that's where they remember me from, but I've aged a bit since then.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've seen pictures. You look lovely. I mean, it's you know, I think we've all grown up, but it's you've aged so gracefully. I mean, it's just, you know, it's you look lovely and you're beautiful, and it's just great to see that you've done so many wonderful things since that time. One of the things I was curious about, because I know that, you know, it being an episodic type show, there were so many different, every show was different, and it was something new every week, and lots of storylines. Do you have a particular favorite or favorites that, you know, you just recall the most?
No, actually, no. I'm not really good at remembering a lot about the show.
Oh, okay. Well,
where are you located? You've got this wonderful accent, and I've been doing
well,
a play.
I know
we didn't really get the southern accent. I'm interested.
We didn't get a lot of time to talk before we went live. I'm actually in North Carolina and fighting somewhat of this pollen, you know, air that we've got going on right now. So yes, I'm very much southern, very southern.
Okay. All right. Because that is such a different accent, let's say, than Oklahoma or Texas. And I'm going to be doing a play. I've been working on a play called Unbroken Circle, where I play Aunt June. And Aunt June has sort of an Oklahoma accent. A little bit more Texas, a little bit more Oklahoma. So it's different. The accent is very different. At first, when you started talking, I thought you were maybe even Australian. Because
really?
The way the vowel sounds were.
Well, it's funny because when I go to other parts, you know, of our country, and I visit other places, people immediately will ask me, are you from North Carolina? Or are you from Texas? I guess there
right.
are some parts of Texas where the dialect is similar to our southern dialect here. So, you know, and so I always kind of just tease them and go, well, which place do you think I'm from kind of thing. So, but it's always fun. I mean, people always comment on my, yeah, people always comment on my accent. Of course, today my voice, I apologize, is a little bit of a train wreck because, it's, you know, like I said, the pollen is just really taking its toll on me. But other than that, I'm good. So, well, it, you know, it's, it's really interesting because I know that a lot of people, you know, they do remember you from the Brady Bunch the most. But one of the things kind of forward thinking to today, in comparison to the child stars of today, and there have been so many, what do you think was different for you being a child star, you know, during the time of the Brady Bunch as compared to child stars of today and what they possibly contend with or go through?
Well, we were fortunate that we didn't have paparazzi following us around. I think that it's a lot more intrusive now. We were expected to do publicity and photo shoots and so forth, but we were able to have our private lives, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of intrusion. We were always on guard for, you know, we were mainly concerned that maybe fans might be interested, but it wasn't ever as much the media.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it's crazy, you know, how in your face the media is, especially for the younger set today. And some of them really pay, you know, a price for being out there, especially if they're so popular, they can't hardly turn around without a camera being right there. And
right.
It's somewhat tragic in a way, you know, at least you guys could still, did you still feel like as you were in that era filming the Brady Bunch, you still had your childhood, to, you know, with being able to act.
Sure,
yeah.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, do you and the cast members ever keep in touch? Or had you kept
really,
in touch
not
through
really,
the years?
No, sort of like, you know, you've gone to school with people and now you've moved on, you have your own lives.
Yeah, that's so true. Now I want to fast forward to 2013, and you've
okay.
been quite busy of late. and since those early days of starting the Brady Bunch, I mean, you've done a lot of different things. But this year in particular, you've been working a lot, and you recently shot the independent film Blue Ruin and
right.
played the role of Chris. Yeah, and who was part of, I mean, as I understand it, the character was part of a revenge-seeking family, and I might note for the audience, this was chosen for the Cannes Directors Fortnight. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. I haven't seen the movie yet, and I would, you know, I'd love to go to Cannes, but I think it's too pricey. You know, I looked up the you know, the prices of the round trip, you know, but so I guess I'm probably not going to go to Cannes? I don't know. Yeah,
you know, in the South, we draw it out. We say cans, but you know, it's
cans.
Probably
well,
just said it. There you go.
Soda comes in a can, but I think the movies are shown at con.
There you go.
So anyway, I probably am not going to get to go also because I'm going to be in rehearsals for this play. But yeah, it's a fascinating turn for me. It's she's a trashy mean lady, and it's a smallish part, but. Things get pretty rough in that movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, of course, it's off the beaten path from, like, the Brady Bunch and some other stuff you've done. I mean, was this role, did you find it to be very challenging to portray in this, you know, in
well,
this particular
film? Well, small, but it's you know, the bad girl parts or the mean people parts are always the most fun to play because, you know, you spend your whole life trying to follow the rules and be a good person and, to be able to be this awful person who's just mean and nasty and, you know, it's just so much fun.
Well, you know, you get to, especially if you personally are not that way, you get to be somebody you're not, really. I mean, that is the
well,
beauty of
we'll
acting.
Just say that. We'll just say that, won't we?
Well, you know, I know you no other way, so, you know, well, one thing, also just as recently as last month, you did the play Unbroken Circle, which has gotten
right.
excellent reviews and is being transferred to a limited commercial run off Broadway coming up, I think, in May? And that's quite impressive.
Yeah, I think we opened last week of May.
Well, give us a little background, if you can, on this play.
Well, this is something interesting about that I've come to find out about plays. And it's happened with a couple of friends of mine, and it's happened with me as well. It takes a lot longer, I think, for a play to be shown on Broadway. By the time you see something on Broadway, it might have been worked on for years. My friend John Bolton, who was in A Christmas Story, the musical this year, and has been nominated for a Drama Desk Award, worked on that show for probably 2 or 3 years out of town. And same with Unbroken Circle. It started out with table reads at least a year ago, and James Wesley, the playwright and producer, has kept with it and kept developing it further and further. And now we're gonna put it up for realsies.
Oh wow! Well, that's awesome. I mean, that is just that's exciting. I mean, that's got to be exciting for you. And I wish I, you know, where I live in North Carolina, there's not a lot of opportunities to, you know, to see plays and see theater the way, you know, I would love to. I would love to get to New York and just have a whole week of doing nothing but going to off-Broadway shows.
Yes, I've always found them to be
so incredibly fascinating.
Yeah, different times of the year there are different festivals. There's the Nymph Festival, which is the musical theater festival where new plays are put up. But there's always something going on in New York, on Broadway and off Broadway and off Broadway. And the interesting thing is that, I mean, I'm sure that they record these shows, but each time you see it, it's a unique experience. Each time you see it, it's a different show. And the actors certainly know that. The audience doesn't know that, but you definitely always come backstage and go, oh, I forgot that line, or oh, I did better on this, or I did worse on this. And it's very ephemeral. It's just that's it, and it's gone. It's like smoke. When I was doing, I did a couple of rounds of Love, Loss, and What I Wore here in New York, and loved doing it. And because it's a show where you're sitting and reading, and you're not necessarily in character, it's not like a full line story all the time. I was able to actually track during our last performance. Well, that's the last time we'll hear that piece by that person, and that's the last time we'll hear that piece by that person, and it's just sort of just smoke blowing away in the wind. Really interesting experience.
Oh yeah, and well, you know, this is not your current play is not your first time performing off Broadway. I mean, what do you enjoy most about theater?
Each one, like I said, each performance is unique. It takes a lot of stamina to be able to do 8 shows a week. I also did a show here off Broadway called Miss Abigail's Guide to Dating, Mating, and Marriage, where I was pretty much the main character. It was a 2-character play. And 8 shows a week. It was a short show, so we did 3 shows on Saturdays. So just the physical stamina of being able to do it, you think, well, you're just working at night. You must have your days free. It must be great. But you have to sleep in, and you still have to live the rest of your life. You still have to get the laundry done and the dog walked and the grocery shopped and whatever else might be going on in your life. And then go do a show. So it takes a lot of it's a lot of hard work. I was actually in South Carolina. I was just in Charleston. I shot an episode of Army Wives.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that show is so huge. When is that gonna air?
I'm not sure. It's the next to last episode of this season.
Oh, okay.
But boy, was that great to get to go to Charleston and get to be on that show. It's just so wonderful.
I know. I've actually never watched the show before. I mean, you would think it being in so close proximity to where I'm located. I mean, that it, you know, I've actually never even been to Charleston, but it's like on the bucket list of places to visit. I mean, it's almost in my back door, you know.
Right.
But
right.
It's like, you know, when you think of traveling somewhere, you don't think of going to places that are within driving distance. You think, oh, I'm going to go off, you know, halfway across the country and do something exotic. And, you know, you just don't ever think that some of the neatest places in the world are practically in your backyard.
It's definitely worth the trip. And if you can drive, my gracious. Yeah, you should definitely.
Oh yeah, it would take. I think from here it would be maybe 5 hours, 5.5, 6 hours, something like that. So you know, it wouldn't be as long of a trip as some other places to drive in a given time. But I mean, it's about the same, maybe just not quite the same distance from here to Atlanta. So you know, it's basically a day trip. You know, it's just an overnight trip. But yeah, I've always heard immaculate things about Charleston. It's just it has so much charm and you know, so much history there. So naturally it's a great place I would think to film anything really. Well, what, you know, you have performed, you've done theater, you've done television, you've done film. Which do you enjoy the most?
Whichever one I'm doing at the time. They're all great mediums to work in, and you know, you don't necessarily have to limit yourself to one or the other. Television is something I'm definitely very familiar with and comfortable with. But it's been fun to do these other films. I've also been doing a web series that we've turned into a feature called The Sisters Plots with some friends here that's very shoestring, just all of us sort of putting it together and, you know, filming in one of the girls' apartments. It's these three sisters. It's sort of a takeoff on madcap 1930s musicals. So we sing and we dance, and it's a very lighthearted romp. So that we just finished filming that last weekend. So it's in post production right now.
You are always working. I mean, always working. Do you ever? I mean, what do you do for fun in your downtime?
Well, that's when I started painting. Was when I was not working, and I've just recently moved to New York, and that's been why I've had so much work lately, because there's a lot more opportunity here for me. As an older actress, the plays have a tendency to have more older actresses' parts. There's a lot of TV shooting here, but a few years ago, that was when I had started painting, and I haven't been painting as much because I've been so busy. So I paint. Today, you know, I had some time off, and so I just walked around New York, walked up and down Lexington Avenue, and saw what was there, you know. It's an endlessly interesting city. You can just choose an area and go for a walk and have a lovely afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to talk to you about your painting in just a second, but there's one thing television-related that you did recently. You shot an episode of Law & Order Special Victims Unit, and... And it's the one where you played the head of the parole board hearing, and it was the controversial, or so they say, episode with Mike Tyson.
Right.
And so what was that experience like for you playing opposite Mike Tyson in that episode?
Well, it was just a one-day shoot, but, you know, that show has been on so long. They have got it together like you wouldn't believe. It's so wonderful to walk into a well-oiled production. We were shooting on location in the Bronx, and Mariska Hargitay is just a goddess. She just is so available and present, and, you know, isn't a diva in any way. And she was working really hard that week. I guess they were shooting two shows at once, and they were prepping another show, but you would never know it. She was just very calm and nice. And I met Mike, but I didn't really have any scenes. I mean, he was in the scene, but while you're doing the scene, everybody just sort of stays quiet in between the setups and let the crew do their work and so on. I was in the makeup trailer, and they very cleverly had some magical makeup that covered up his tattoos that he has on his neck and face. And that was a fun behind the scenes thing to see, that they had this just amazing makeup to where you could never tell that he had a tattoo.
I did not see that episode, but I saw, like, screenshots and, you know, and footage and stuff. And I was amazed, because for a second I was kind of second-guessing myself. I was like, well, maybe he never had the tattoos. Maybe they were kind of, like, you know, just kind of not real. And maybe this is his real face, you know. And then I was like, no, he had, you know, so I was kind of second-guessing myself because they did a phenomenal job covering all that. I mean, you're right. I mean, you could not tell he ever had the first tattoo.
Right.
So,
and with all the HD, whatever format it is that they're using now, you can't get away with a freckle these days.
Uh-uh.
You know, anything that's false is very visible. So,
yes.
They did a great job.
No doubt about it. Now I want to talk to you about your art because I will just go ahead and preface by saying I love it. I absolutely love your style of art and how you paint and, you know, the work that you've done. It's nostalgic, and I love anything that has a nostalgic feel to it. Is that how you would describe it?
Is that what?
Is that how you would describe your artwork?
Yeah. I would say that a lot of it does. I started out doing mainly still lifes, coffee cups and restaurant scenes and things like that. And I've always been drawn to those old restaurant-style coffee cups and diner-type crockery and those kinds of things. And then for a while, I've collecting little statuettes and vases that were from the 30s and 40s. So those are the things that were around me, so those are the things that I painted. And then as I painted, I was watching Turner Classic Movies a lot because it doesn't have commercials, and sort of good to have a distraction while you're painting so that you can just paint and not think about what you're painting. It sounds strange, but that's sort of the way it works for me. And then I started noticing that the Turner Classic Movies had a lot of interesting composition and storylines, the film noir movies. And so I got the idea to do two series of paintings for movies. One is called Here Comes Trouble, and it's all black and white paintings taken from film noir movies. I record the movie, and then I freeze frame it on the DVR, and then I take a picture of the television. And then I work from that as my image, and then I make up a three-word title and paste it on with sort of looks like a, you know, an old-fashioned ransom note that's pasted onto the painting. Like, here, like,
oh.
It was you, now that's done. And then the other series I had just, you know, and I've tried lots of different things that have not worked. So I started this series that I didn't know was going to work of Western paintings from the 1960s and 40s Western movies. And the idea behind that was that they all had to have a blue sky and a horse. Now, I've never painted landscapes or horses, but for some reason I had the idea that I would paint it all in vertical strokes. And somehow that just worked. So they're all in vertical strokes. It's all sort of those Technicolor colors, but not very bright. It's a very limited palette. And it's all in vertical strokes. And it's just lots of fun. They all have a blue sky and a horse. And that's just been a lot of fun.
Do you think you would ever tackle any seascapes? Being so close to the coast here in North Carolina, I mean, it's kind of second nature to just either, you know, I'm three
right.
hours from the mountains, I'm 3 hours from the coast. So have you ever considered or have you ever done anything along those lines?
A couple, but I found that, the tighter parameters you put around your work, the better the work is. So I've tried to maintain focus on a subject matter and explore that and get better at that one. Who knows, maybe say seascapes at some point, but not right now. I've also not done a lot of architecture, but recently for a show here, started doing some paintings of photographs I've been taking around New York. And so it's paintings of sculptures, like the Atlas in Rockefeller Center, and also some buildings. I did three paintings of the Chrysler Building. You know, I'm always branching out, always trying other things.
Now, as you as you get inspired to do these certain paintings, I mean, is it kind of something that, you know, you just kind of see something, you say, I think, you know, I'm going to try this, or do you kind of mull it around in your mind for a bit before you kind of go to canvas with it?
Well, what I do is I realize let's say I have a show and I know that I need to create product. I have a big, huge computer file of photographs that I've been taking, and I might have a size in mind, or I might know I want to do a chair or a coffee cup or a Chrysler Building. So I go through my files of images, and when my eye catches one that I like, then I decide to do that, and that's when I might decide to crop it or change it or change the colors, and then I decide what size I want to do. It's a fairly not regimented process, but it's not just loosey-goosey. I find it's much, much more successful if I follow a pattern.
Oh, yeah, and I imagine that has got to be incredibly therapeutic. I know that, you know, there are things that I do, you know, kind of to numb my mind, so to speak, when you mentioned that it's, you know, you just watch TV and you paint it. I mean, to me, that's so therapeutic when I can be doing something creative and not have to really think about what I'm doing.
A little bit, yeah. People think that it's just this, you know, sort of relaxing, like you're just hanging out. But it's actually work. It's not, you know, brain surgery work, but it is work to do it. It's, you physically have to stand there. You do have to pay attention to what you're doing. And it doesn't always come out right. So you have to figure out either how to correct it or you have to start over. But so it's not a walk in the park. It's not painful. It's enjoyable, but it's work.
Yeah. About how long does it take you to complete a painting?
It's so funny. People always ask me that. And I, you know, somebody said to somebody, you know, how long did it take you to get to, you know, it's like, well, you know, it took me 55 years. It took me my whole life.
Yeah, really?
It took me my whole life to be able to you know, strap myself to the easel and make myself do it sometimes. So it varies. It could be a couple of hours. It could be a couple of days. I might put something aside. I don't know if you would clock it that I'd worked on something for 2 hours and I didn't work on it for 6 months, and then I worked on it for 2 hours and then I had to throw it away. So it's sort of hard to gauge.
I think that's so true. You know, just because I know from my own personal experience when I, you know, I used to be a big crocheter and a big cross stitcher, and you really can't put a window of time on a project like that, because you're right. You know, you work on it for a bit, you go do something else, life happens, you come back to it. And, you know, I've got a Christmas stock, and I hate to admit this, but for my youngest child, who is now 15, that I started when she was in my womb. And it's halfway finished. And it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like, am I ever going to finish the stocking? You know, it's kind of become a running joke in the family now. It's been so long. But it is. It's one of those things that, you know, you just don't have a specific time that you can say, okay, I did this in 3 months. Because there's a lot that can happen in 3 months' time, you know. I really do appreciate that. Now, I want to congratulate you on your recent art show, The Three Faces of Eve, at the Michael Ingbar Gallery in New York. And I understand that due to its enormous response that the show has been extended, I guess, what, through today, maybe?
Yes, yeah.
Congratulations on that. Talk a little bit about The Three Faces of Eve.
Well, Michael has been a friend of mine for quite a while, and he has a gallery that usually focuses on New York architecture. So he asked me if I had any, you know, architecture paintings and wanted to do a show with me. But since I don't have a lot of architecture paintings, except for the ones that I did for that show, really, and a few other New York things, we came up with this idea to have it be, instead of usually a show, we'll have one subject matter focus. And we decided to do The Three Faces of Eve, because I have that, and I have film noirs there, and then I have these still lifes. So it's sort of almost like a retrospective, but just essentially showing that I've been doing these three different types of art that you wouldn't necessarily just show together, because it's much easier for the audience, for the clients, to focus on one subject matter. It gets confusing. Why are you painting black and white stuff, and why are you painting Chrysler buildings and coffee cups? It's confusing. You know, they like to have it more focused.
Yeah, but I, like I said, I really love your work, and I hope to own some of it one of these days. And speaking of that, if someone wants to purchase your work, how do they go about doing that?
At my website, eveplum.tv, my galleries are listed.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go there. There's one in Scottsdale. There's one in go to the website. There are like four or five.
That's the easiest.
The only one that's not no longer a business is Wynn Faulkner, or Wynn Fine Art is no longer a business. So
well,
we need to update the website.
That's okay. You've given me some great places to go to, you know, because I definitely want to check out everything you've done and have something in my home that I can say, Eve Plum, she made this, you know, she created it.
Thank you.
So,
that would be great. I love to sell them.
Yeah, and that's why I was asking you if you do seascapes, because my whole house is, you know, beach theme, and I have seascapes, you know, in a lot of places, and a lot of, you know, canvas paintings, and my daughter paints as well, but, you know, it would be really cool. But I love, you know, like the building paintings, and I love architecture paintings. I mean, all the stuff you described is you know, I just find that they're all so
interesting. Also, right now, what you can do is actually go to Michael Ingbar Gallery's website and give him a call, because he has the physical paintings there right now. The Michael Ingbar Gallery would be a good place to go and buy it from him, because he has a lot of the stuff right now.
Oh, I would definitely check it out. Before we let you go, do you have time to take a call or two?
You know what? I don't. I'm just about to leave for another appointment here.
Okay.
But Hello to everyone.
Well, it has been such a pleasure speaking with you and catching up and just talking about everything that you've got going on. I mean, it's just so nice to know that you're still out there. You're still, you know, on our screens. You're still doing plenty of stuff. And you're just an amazing actress.
Well, thank you so much. You're so nice.
Well, you're very kind, and thank you for your time. I know you've been very busy of late, so we do appreciate the time you've given us today.
Okay, thank you. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Dee. Take care now.
Okay, bye-bye.
All righty, bye-bye. Well, we want to thank E. Plum for being our special guest today, and for those of you who were on hold to speak with her, she was pressed for time, and, you know, we do apologize we weren't able to get to any calls, but it's just so much fun catching up with her. You know, I can't say it's been a blast from the past because she is doing so many things right now, you know, like you wouldn't believe. It just seems like she's, gosh, I mean, my head spins to think about how busy she is, how much she's done just this year alone, how much she has going on between her art and, you know, plays and, you know, filming upcoming episodes of television shows. I mean, it's just, she's got her hands in a lot of places and doing some great things. And it's just, it's so nice to still see her out there after all these years and see her as E. Plum, not just Jan Brady, as she used to be on The Brady Bunch. I mean, that seems like eons ago now. But what a treat speaking with her today, and what an honor. We do appreciate her time and thank her so much. And that is pretty much going to wrap our show for today, and we want to thank all the listeners for tuning in and being here with us. If you're brand new to our program, welcome aboard. We're so glad that you tuned in, and we hope that you won't be a stranger. And so with that, I'm going to say have a great evening. I hope that your day was wonderful and that the rest of your week will be as well. And so with that, good night all. Take care, and we'll be back here again real soon. See you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio, where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast and, as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.